actually a subcommittee on education, January 31st, and today we have a public hearing, on the State Board of Psychologist Examiners. I almost feel like I should turn it over to Dr. Barnhart to my left. I'm going to call up Deborah Ormond, the Executive Director of the State Board of Psychologist Examiners, and also, I believe, Susan Dale will be coming up as well, and Sean Range from Department of DAS Budget Management Division. So, my understanding is there was communication, and it's such a nice day, and this shouldn't be extraordinarily complicated but important, so if we can set this so by 3:45 we're all exiting, that would be phenomenal. And with that?
I'm good with that. My name is Deborah Ormond. I am the Executive Director of the Board of Psychologist Examiners. This is our Board Chair, Susan Dale. Excuse me. She's been a board member for almost 5 years now. The Board of Psychologist Examiners is a freestanding agency with Title Act and Practice Act. We have 7 board members, 5 psychologists, and 2 public members. We have 3 staff, 1 full-time investigator, 1 program analyst, and myself. We do have a consumer protection mission. I wanted to mention that I'm new to my job, so I'll do the best I can to answer questions. And if there's any follow-up needed, I'd be happy to do that. My packet is fairly small, and I thought you'd appreciate that, although, you know, it covers all the bases, but it's fairly short, so I'll just kind of go through it. The first thing is we were asked to provide as our key budget drivers, and ours are consumer protection and character and fitness initiatives, as well as our statutory obligations. The first part being complaint investigations. The data around complaint investigations is in the very back of your packet. It's kind of an add-on little piece there with table and talking about the different complaint investigations that we do, the type and nature of them, as well as how they were resolved and any discipline that took place for the last, I want to say, 10 years. One of the things that I wanted to say about complaint investigations is that timeliness continues to be a dilemma for us, as it is for many of the boards. Our cases get more and more complex. They were taking a lot of time. They also are becoming more like litigation, a lot more representation by counsel, and those sorts of things. And as well as for us, the most important part is that the licensee get full due process and get a thorough investigation, and that the complainant also gets a full investigation to make sure that every stone has been turned and every witness investigated. Next budget driver would be our application review. We have a steady growth of applicants since the agency began. It bumps up about 20 a year, just to give you an approximation.
Excuse me, Ms. Ormond.
Ormond.
So I've got this in front of me, and this blue packet. So I'm just, because we have a lot of paper up here. So are you on a particular page?
I am.
On the slide? Can you tell me what that is? Pardon me?
The first page.
First page still. Okay, all right. I just want to make sure, because we're all on, literally and figuratively, on the same page. So, all right.
Page one.
Just want to make sure I'm
there. For the complaints and the investigation, is that the back?
Okay.
I don't know if Chair has that.
Please proceed.
Okay. Application review, again, steady growth. One of the quality initiatives that we have been working on is revamping the entire application process and asking more in-depth character and fitness questions. There's been a lot of research done recently about an applicant's and a student's history and how that feeds into later discipline, or does it imply later discipline. So we're doing a much more thorough job of character and fitness screening because of those studies that have come out. Again, trying to address these discipline issues in the beginning rather than in the end. One of the things we're doing around application review is criminal background checks. We helped start that in 2007, and that's when our policy packages is asking for the flow-through money to accept money for background checks and then spend the money. The other thing we're doing related to applications is really beefing up our residency supervision program. One of the things all the applicants must do is have 1 year of supervised practice postdoctoral. Nationally, there's a trend to eliminate that. Our board feels like it's a really critical piece of education for residents. So one of the things we're doing is we've held this, it's about a month ago, orientation to residency supervision, helping these dyads understand better their roles and responsibilities. We've had a number of issues, complaints come up around supervision and responsibilities for those that they supervise. So we decided to start educating them more about that. And we're going to do another one in the spring because we actually had to turn people away. It was so well attended. Another area still on page one, jurisprudence examination that we do. We do approximately 50 to 60 a year. We currently have an oral exam, although last session we were given the funding and authority to have a written exam developed, and that's what we're doing now. It's a long process. And one of our performance measures is around our examination. Folks are not real thrilled with the oral exam. They're sort of falling out of favor, and I expect that performance measure to change once we go to a written exam. Another area of budget drivers, licensure renewal, again, city growth. We have about 1,300 psychologists and psychologist associates. Our growth is about 100 more each year, and that's on the table in the very back of your packet. Kind of, again, steady growth. Last year, one of the efficiency things we implemented was a biennial licensure renewal. It's one of the strategies we use for keeping the same number of staff while dealing with the larger growth, and that is things that we can do to reduce paperwork, et cetera. It's been easier for us to have this biennial renewal, and it seems to be favorable to the psychologists as well. We got, when we did our customer satisfaction survey, they implicated or implied that they really liked that. It was helpful to them as well. Other area is continuing education compliance. That's one of the ways in which we help and ensure quality in the field. We have a very high compliance rate, and another one of our cost savings or efficiency things that we're doing is we used to, until this year, audit every single CE report that came in, and because we have such high compliance, the board and I decided that we would just audit 20%, and that would make more sense. Okay. I guess the next page two would be the performance measures that are also, performance measures. That would be Appendix A. That's our progress report around the performance measures. Overall, we're doing great. We have making progress on most of them. Our residency supervision performance measure, we exceed the target on that. Folks find that very useful and helpful to their practice and their learning. We have 84 supervision contracts right now, which is that dyad of supervision residents. We have 84 that we are monitoring. Our next performance measure, yes? Oh, sorry, do you have a question? Number two is our oral examination that I referred to earlier. People not so happy about that. I noticed that it went down and then it went up when we announced that we were going to change the test. So we're actually making improvement, but I think it's really related to the fact that we're going to have a different exam and not that they like the oral exam so well. So we're making progress, but again, we're changing that. And number three performance measure would be our continuing education. As I said, we really do very well with that. The folks are very compliant, and we don't have many, if any, issues around continuing education compliance. Number four is our complaint investigations.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On continuing education,
yes.
I know that some other licensing boards have gone to extensive use of internet systems for continuing education, other modern technologies. What is the Board of Psychologists Examiners doing in that area, if anything?
If one takes an internet course related to a university, that's great. If they take it unrelated to university, maybe via the internet, it would be considered home study, and there's a limit on how many home study units you can take. The board feels like that face-to-face, if you will, interaction with other colleagues is a really important component of continuing education.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Performance measure number four, complaint investigations. Again, this is something that we struggle with, the timeliness, and we have raised our goal or our target, and I noticed that if we had kept the old target, we would have exceeded our target, but you know, we're trying to always improve, and so we are improving, and we're even as we raise the target, so that's a good sign. Let's see, and one of the things that we're doing is, again, with our website and revamping a lot of our application materials and other kinds of things, we're trying to make our complaint process a little easier for folks to understand, a little simpler. We're also, a new initiative that we're starting is to have an outreach brochure where we're going to make it available in psychologist's office that they can give it to consumers so that they know where they can go if they have a complaint. So it's an outreach as opposed to education. Okay. Number five would be the customer service performance measure. And this is the first year, 2006, when we used the, I guess it's the DAS mandated customer service format where the subcategories of timeliness, accuracy, helpfulness, etc. For me, this was a big disappointment being new to my job, but I did recognize when I first came in that we had an issue with customer service, and it's something that I addressed immediately, and I expect a completely different picture next year. So I wasn't surprised by the numbers, but I was a bit disappointed.
Question, Representative Edwards.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Orman, what's the sample size relevant to this slide?
Chair Galizio, Representative Edwards, we survey complainants, mm-hmm. licensees, applicants, and other customers such as attorneys, insurance company folks that we interacted with. The sample size is about 1,200, mm-hmm. And we had, a pretty good return rate of about 20%. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's good. As a marketing person, I would know better. But it felt like a good amount of feedback for us.
Mm-hmm. Yes, question.
Representative Morton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This appears to be, from the look that we have this far, which I know we're like 20 minutes into this, the area where you have the biggest potential to respond to what your customers are saying. And I know that when the factors affecting results here, kind of reading why this is this way, that there is a history with this agency of some difficulty with the administration of it, and so I know that there are some issues there, but it appears that the communication with the regulated community isn't quite what it could be, and so you were talking to us about upgrading the website and making information more available. Do you have other plans, ways to reach out to your constituency and let them know that that things are improving and looking for input on how to improve the systems?
Chair Galizio, Representative Morgan, that was one of the positive comments I got on the customer service survey was, we're glad you're asking, and there was lots of comments written, and I talked to our professional organization, which is Oregon Psychological Association, asking them to tell their members, and it actually was put on their website chat site. They chat with each other, and that we really wanted the feedback. They were aware that we wanted the feedback, and I would agree with you that we've had a significant amount of turnover in administration. We've had a new person here every biennium for the last 10 years. And that does affect, I think, staff morale and other efficiencies, such as customer service. I can't remember your last question.
Are you going to resurvey people in some point in the future and try to pinpoint things that you can improve within the systems that are going to raise your ratings here?
Yes, I can tell you when you look at the ones where they were the lowest, it had to do with availability of information, helpfulness, and expertise. There was a culture with the agency, if you will, that I noticed that there was more of a regulatory bend in responding to questions and less of a facilitation culture. And I think in part that stemmed from we are very legally oriented and rule oriented, and it was maybe folks not understanding exactly how they could do both, facilitate as well as regulate.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I've put a number of things in place to address the issues. I recognize them right away. I've been in my job 4 or 5 months, and I already see a difference.
Is there any kind of a strategic plan or a business plan to build these ratings up?
Well, only that we haven't actually written one down, but we do a board retreat every November, and it was one of the things that we talked about strategies and what we could do.
Thank you.
Okay. The Barry Labs initiative performance measure is that brand new one that we were asked to put in the binder, but we haven't started yet, around governance. I don't know if you're all familiar with that, but okay. Page number 4, at the very beginning of the packet, is our policy packages. As I said, we have the policy package number 100 is around character and fitness, and it's doing the background checks, criminal background checks. And number 102.
Representative Barnett.
Thank you. Are you talking about applicants, background checks for applicants, or somebody else?
Chair DeLisio, Representative Barnhart. We're talking about applicants as well as current licensees. As they renew, we will do criminal background checks.
Okay, and what would you plan to do with that information for a current licensee? Assuming that you've got a negative report, what would you do with that information?
My thinking on that would be that as we develop the administrative rules, we would have to discuss what the process would be and where that would be part of our discussion. The other response to that would be, in the same way that we respond to complaints, that each one is so unique and the situation is so unique, that each of those situations would also be looked at. For example, how old the charge was, what kind of a charge it was, et cetera, and how it might or might not impact one's practice or fitness to practice.
Do your statutes allow you to disqualify psychologists from licensure based on their criminal history?
Chair DeLisio, Representative Barnhart. I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
What I'm asking is whether or not you have the authority to not license somebody because of something in their criminal history. This is a question distinct from the question of misbehavior in practice. And for example, in some rules, we don't, or some statutes, we don't allow certain privileges for people who've been convicted of a felony, regardless of what it is, regardless of whether it has anything to do with the issue or not. I don't know, frankly, whether the psychology practice licensing statute has anything to do with the criminal law and whether you would have any authority to do anything with what you might discover in a criminal background check.
The board has the authority to bring a complaint on its own, and we do that occasionally, or the board does that occasionally. So that would be a situation where that would be something they would bring on their own. Information that was found out they could bring on their own accord.
Yeah, I'm asking a slightly different question.
Okay.
And that is whether or not you have the authority to do anything with that information once you've obtained it. I suspect that you can probably deny a license to a new applicant on the basis of character and fitness. I wonder if you could do that with a person who's already licensed who has committed a crime that's not related to their practice of psychology.
Representative Barnhart, I was just, you just made my answer maybe not be quite what I was hoping.
Ms. Dale, if you could just, your name for the record, state your name.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Susan Dale. I think under statute, what she said, we would open a complaint. I think there is someone who has broken the law. If there is a, I think felony is in fact something that we can take action against someone who's committed a felony that somehow goes back to character. It doesn't have to just go to fitness in terms of the practice.
Thank you.
This is going to be new to us as we do these, but yeah.
And just before I go to the question that Senator Devlin has, it's been pointed out to me, Representative Barnhart, the next policy package, number 102, at least mentions the fitness to practice.
I should have read that in the paper.
No, but I think you asked a really important question. And, Senator Devlin, you go ahead, and I think I might have a question too.
Yeah, I think obviously it's new to you, but we saw some examples of this the other day when we were doing the chiropractors. When we read through the cases that they had, I believe there were two, maybe only one, but I think there were two, where a party had been denied a license because they had misrepresented, not that they had actually, it wasn't even a determination of what the criminal background was, but that they had claimed that there was no criminal background and someone was actually found. I guess that other question that you ask will probably be, I don't know if you have a determination in state law about, I would think most people would think all felonies involve some degree of moral turpitude, but there might be some clear distinctions between a involuntary manslaughter that occurs because of an absence of presence of mind on a freeway, versus someone that actually has a recorded child sexual abuse in the first wanting to apply it to be a psychologist. And also you have probably the issue that you probably hopefully never have this. You get one back and it says, well, they'll probably notify you that there's an outstanding warrant for the party. So they will probably contact you directly in that case.
And I guess I was just trying to remember back, obviously we passed the bill last time permitting background checks, but it's my understanding, and maybe somebody on the committee knows different, that it provided the opportunity for agencies, but agencies had to affirmatively request and put forth that you, as the board, wanted to indeed do these background checks. So am I correct with that, members of the committee, that in other words nothing mandated that agencies and boards had to, it just said you have to come forward and affirmatively request to do the background checks
to some degree, Mr. Chairman? But I do remember that when I came into the legislature, and I think in the sessions before that, the legislature went on a rampage requiring background checks for everything that they could possibly imagine. And I think in this case it's probably a very clear, solid basis for having the background checks. But I remember, I don't want to go on this, but I remember we were having a great deal of difficulty because they'd required it for real estate agents. And we had to make some corrections in the law because we we'd get real estate agents, and they couldn't be licensed because we couldn't get background checks for them for 6 months. So somebody would hire someone, but they couldn't go to work for 6 months.
Chair Lisio, my understanding is the same as yours, that we were in the authority to do it, and then it was up to each agency to write rules around it. And I think in large part we think a lot of, you know, our current rules and laws already, we would have remedies around this, as Senator Devlin mentioned, like chiropractors board, if one lied on their application, that would be sufficient. Okay. So back to the policy packages, of which there's two. The second one is we've asked for statutory authority, and there's actually a work session on Monday, so it's to order evaluations. And we had initially asked for money around that, but the legislative fiscal analyst, Ms. Manthe, recommended no AG increase, and I agreed with that after we had the discussion. So I'm not sure what this committee's role would be vis-a-vis the second package.
Mr. Chair, the package is still in there for the $10,000. What we talked about was that you had sufficient flexibility in your Attorney General budget probably to absorb it, but that you were overspending in other line items. And so the package is still valid. When we get to work session, I'll walk the subcommittee through how we change the package to meet your needs.
Thank you.
There's some discussion around the issue of House Bill 2157 in the budget narrative, too.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, Representative Morgan just pointed out that in our binder on E5, there was a good discussion of House Bill 2157 that allowed the background checks. So, for your information and for my information, so appreciate that.
Thank you. Let's see. I don't have a whole lot more to say today.
Don't feel bad about it.
I don't.
Well, it's okay. You sounded. I need to follow up some questions.
If I may, the way this is worded is, I find it leads to another question. Package 102. You say you request statutory authority to, I assume it's two ordered evaluations of licensees or applicants if there's reasonable cause to doubt fitness to practice. Do you believe that you do not now have statutory authority to order that, or are you simply asking for budget authority to spend the money?
Chair Galizio, Representative Barnhart, we do not have authority to ask to order it. We ask and sometimes get compliance.
Right.
But we don't have the authority to order it.
A follow-up. Do you have a bill in the legislature to amend your statute so that you could get authority?
Chair Galizio, Representative Barnhart, yes, we do. It was heard Monday, Friday.
Senate Bill
229.
Senate Bill 229?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Good clarification. Senator Devlin?
Can I get a clarification on this now today? Part of the statute here, one of the issues we have with background checks was, obviously there are different types of criminal background checks, but was part of the statute to give, probably not agencies as small as your agency, but access to to our criminal background check system, direct access without going through the state police. Some of our agencies do have the ability to make direct access, so I was just wondering, because the way it's worded.
Chair Galizio, Senator Devlin, my understanding is most all of us go through state police.
Okay.
They can do meds.
That's what I meant. Because I remember there was an issue about letting more agencies have access to meds.
Right. Which
before.
Is just Oregon, I think.
Yeah.
Doesn't the judicial department have direct access to it? The background checks, everybody has to go through the
so
state
So it's a question
police.
Of submitting. You have to go through the state police if you're going to submit fingerprints and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, otherwise, all that you're checking is that the person represents themselves to be, what their background is.
That's correct.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Walker?
I'm not sure. I was a little bit late, so I'm not sure they went over the consumer protection statistics. But if they did, I was reviewing them, and I just wanted to tell them that I'm very impressed that your number of complaints has decreased to 36. That's the lowest number of complaints you've had in the last 4 years, and I appreciate that you must have been doing something right to educate your members how to do it better, because we're going to hear your complaints.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Walker. So you've concluded. Am I correct?
My presentation.
All right, I just want to make sure. And are there any other questions or comments from the committee? Well, I think that speaks highly of you. Great job. They're coming back in the not too distant future.
Tomorrow.
Fantastic. Okay, I'll be sure. I'm going to wear a different outfit to make sure, because you're coming back so soon. Ms. Dale, you have any comments? All right. Well, I'm going to then conclude the public hearing, and this committee is adjourned.